Welcome to the Caltex Theater, a full hour of dramatic entertainment broadcast over a nationwide network of stations throughout Australia. The Caltex Theater is brought to you by Caltex Oil, marketers of over 1,000 outstanding petroleum products, in association with Caltex dealers and distributors everywhere. Tonight in the Caltex Theatre, you will hear The Third Husband, an adaptation from Somerset Maugham's great comedy, Home and Beauty. This is the story of Victoria Cardew, whose husband Bill is reported killed. She then marries her husband's best friend, Frederick. Back, however, comes Bill, husband number one, who is not dead. And with a third husband, Lester, in the offing, Victoria suddenly finds herself swamped with spouses. Starring tonight, you will hear Margaret Christensen, Alan White, and Leonard Bullen. The Caltex Theatre presents The Third Husband, Act One.
This is a story about a young woman.
Young lady, please.
I beg your pardon. This is a story about a young lady named Victoria. She was born Victoria Shuttleworth.
But that's not my name now.
No. Shuttleworth is not Victoria's name now. She's been married.
Twice.
Yes, twice.
Three times if you count the third husband. My name at the moment is
Miss... Don't say it. You'll spoil the end of the story.
Oh, sorry.
Well, as I was saying, Victoria lived in her comfortable house in Westminster right through the war, from 1914 up to November 1918, when our story really commences. She lived there with her first two husbands.
One at a time?
One at a time, of course.
They were both heroes, and they both had the DSO. I flatter myself there aren't many women who've been married to two DSOs. I think I've done my bit. Dear Frederick, and poor dear Bill... Oh, dear.
Look, perhaps you'd like to tell this story yourself.
All right, if you like. You take a little rest.
I give up.
Well, I was married to Bill first. You know, Major William Cardew, DSO. I adored Bill. But then, when we got word that he was killed at Ypres, I married Frederick, Major Frederick Lowndes, who was Bill's best friend. I adored Freddie, too, you know. I went into mourning for a year for Bill first, before I married Freddie. Of course, black does suit me. And when the baby was born, Freddie's and mine, I mean, I called him William after my first husband. My mother didn't quite approve of that. I remember she brought it up one afternoon just after the armistice, when she came to call on me in my bedroom at the house in Westminster.
But surely, my darling, calling Freddie's son William will always remind you of how you lost Bill. And I shouldn't think Freddie would like it very much.
Freddie has me now, Mother. He can't grudge it if I give a passing thought to that poor dead hero who's lying in a nameless grave in France.
Oh, don't upset yourself, dear. You know how bad it is for your skin.
Yes. Anyway, I won't lose Freddie. Now he's got a nice, safe job at the War Office. And he just adores being married to me.
In your place, I'd have married Lester Peyton. Men who wear spats always make the best husbands. It's a sign of an orderly mind.
It's more often a sign of cold feet. I expect he wears bed socks, and I should hate that. Anyway, I was a soldier's widow. I don't think it would have been patriotic to marry a civilian like Lester Peyton.
Oh, patriotism and heroism are all very well, but at a party not nearly as useful as a faculty for small talk.
Excuse me, madam.
What is it, Taylor?
Mr. Lester Peyton is here, madam. I said I didn't know if you could see him.
Talk of the devil. Bring him up here, Taylor.
Very good, madam.
There. I knew I was right. I knew you attracted him.
Oh, Mother, darling, I could never think of anyone but Freddy. But, of course, it's useful to have someone like Lester to run errands for me. And he can wangle almost anything one wants.
Butter?
Even butter. Sugar, anything at all.
Mr. Lester Payton.
Oh, my dear Mrs. Lance. Ah, Mrs. Shuttleworth.
I hope you don't mind being dragged right upstairs to the bedroom, Mr. Payton. But my bedroom and the nursery are the only two rooms we can spare coal for to have fires, so I'm receiving in here.
But why didn't you let me know you had trouble getting coal? It's out of the question that a pretty woman shouldn't have everything she wants. After all, what's the use of being on the rationing commission if one can't have some sort of pull?
Dear Mr. Payton, you're a perfect marvel.
Victoria deserves consideration. She's worked like a dog all through the war, you know.
I can't remember how many committees I've been on, and I've sold at 23 bazaars.
Have you stocked your teas for wounded soldiers, dear?
Oh, yes, after the armistice.
Oh.
I used to invite a dozen every Thursday, Mr. Payton. At first I had them in the drawing room, but that made them shy, poor dears. So I thought it would be nicer if they had it in the servants' hall. I'm the only woman I know who never had the smallest trouble keeping her maids during the war.
Oh. Darling, I think I'll go to the nursery and see how my dear little grandson is. And you and Lester can have a nice long talk together, eh?
All right, Mother. Poor little darling. He has a cold. I'm so worried.
You're a wonderful mother, Mrs. Lance. And a perfect wife.
Do you think so, Mr. Payton?
Doesn't your husband?
Oh, Freddy's only my husband. His opinion doesn't count.
Victoria! Victoria!
Oh, hello, Payton.
Freddy, where have you been? You promised to take me out for lunch. Bill never forgot his appointments with me.
Didn't he? Fancy that.
Well, I think I'll be getting along. Goodbye, Mrs. Lowndes.
Goodbye, Mr. Payton. So nice of you to come and see me.
And I'll see to that other matter right away. Good day, Lowndes, old chap.
Goodbye. Victoria, are you obliged to receive visitors in your bedroom?
Is he a jealous hubby, then? You silly old thing. You know, it's the only room in the house that's got a fire. No coal, no fire.
Why the dickens don't you have one in the drawing room, where we could all benefit by it, instead of here, where it's no good to anyone but you?
I don't know how you can be so unkind to me. Do I have to remind you that my nerves are still shattered from the shock of Bill's death? I was mad to think of marrying you. Mad, mad, mad. I shall never be happy again. I would give anything in the world to have my dear, dear Bill back again.
I'm glad you feel like that about it. Because he'll be here in about 3 minutes.
What? What? Oh, what on earth do you mean?
Bill Cardew will be here in a few minutes. He rang me up at the club a little while ago.
But Bill's dead.
He showed no sign of it on the telephone.
But you know he was killed. He was reported dead by the War Office. I wore mourning and everything. We even had a memorial service.
I know. It'll take a devil of a lot of explaining turning up like this.
Oh, I shall go stark staring mad in a moment. How do you know it was Bill talking on the telephone?
He said so.
That proves nothing. Lots of people say they're the Kaiser.
Yes, but they speak from a lunatic asylum. He spoke from Waterloo Station.
Well, what did he say exactly? What did he say?
Well, somebody said, "Is that you, Freddy?" I thought I recognized the voice, and I felt all funny. "Yes," I said. "It's me, Bill," he said. "Bill Cardew."
For heaven's sake, be quick about it.
Hello, I said. I thought you were dead. I thought as much, he answered. How are you, I said. A1, he said.
What an idiotic conversation.
Oh, darn it all, I had to say something. Anyway, he said, "You might break it to Victoria." "Righto," I said. He said, "So long." And I said, "So long." And we rang off.
Good heavens.
You know, it puts me in a devilish awkward position.
You? What about me?
Well, Bill may think it's rather funny that I married his wife.
Funny?
On the other hand, he may not.
And you say he'll be here any minute? Oh, dear, I haven't even time to change my frock.
What the deuce do you want to change your frock for?
Well, after all, I am his widow. I think it would be only nice of me to be wearing mourning when he comes. What did he say when you told him we'd married?
I didn't tell him. It's rather a delicate thing to chat about over the telephone. Anyway, I think you're the best person to do that.
I? Do you think that I'm going to do all your dirty work? You just take him by the arm and say, look here, old man, the fact
is... It's no use, Victoria. I won't do it.
Listen to me, Frederick Lowndes.
Hello! Hello, Victoria!
Why, George, here he comes.
Oh.
Well, 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 here we are again, eh?
Bill!
That's my right.
I can hardly believe my eyes.
Give me a kiss, old lady. Mm. Well, Freddy, old man, how's life?
A1, thanks.
Jolly good of you to come and welcome me home, old man. Hoped you would, but I was half afraid you'd have some stupid feeling of delicacy about being here in the house when I arrived.
What, I?
Struck me you might think Victoria and I'd want to be alone just the first moment. But I'd have been sorry not to have your ugly old face here to welcome me.
Well, darling.
It's just like old times to hear you call me darling.
It's one of Victoria's favorite words.
You know, I nearly didn't warn you. I thought it'd be rather a lark to break in on you in the middle of the night. Eh?
Quite a lark.
I'm just as glad you didn't do that, Bill.
What a scene, upon my word, eh? The sleeping beauty upon her virtuous couch, and the man in shocking old suit, shrieks from sleeping beauty, it is I, your husband, Tableau.
I think the little lamb is getting along nicely, Victoria.
Mother, I...
Hello.
What? Who? Who is that?
Well, I may be a bit thinner, and this certainly is a shocking suit, but it's still me, Bill.
Oh, don't come near me. I shall scream. You're dead.
He doesn't seem to know it.
Oh, but it's absurd. Will somebody waken me up?
Shall I pinch her? And if so, where?
Office said you were dead. We had a memorial service.
Fully choral.
That was very nice of you, Victoria.
It was very well attended.
I'm glad it wasn't a frost.
I say, old man, we don't want to hurry you, you know, but we'd like some sort of explanation.
Oh, yes. Well, I was wounded, not killed, and the Huns picked me up and took me to Germany. I think I must have been rather dotty for a bit. Couldn't remember a thing. Memory completely gone. So I couldn't write to you or anything, Victoria.
But your memory came back later?
Gradually. And, of course, I realized then that you'd think I was dead. So as soon as I was released after the armistice, I got back as fast as I could to break the news to you myself. And here I am.
Yes, here you are.
A new spring mattress on our bed, I see. Father will sleep without rocking tonight.
Freddy, tell him.
No, you...
Something's got to be done.
Done? What do you mean?
Mother means about the baby's cold.
Baby? Victoria, a baby? I didn't know. Wonderful. Boy or girl?
A boy named William. After you, you know.
William? Darling, I didn't know. I never guessed when I went away to the war 3 years ago that I... Tell me, darling. How old is the baby?
4 months.
4 months, eh? 4 months! Victoria!
Bill, that is... Oh, Freddy, say something, even...
Look here, old man. The fact is, you've made rather an absurd mistake. You've been away so long that there's a good deal you don't know.
Apparently. I'm a simple creature.
Well, to cut a long story short, the infant in the nursery is not your son.
I had a sort of suspicion it wasn't, I tell you that frankly. Well, who the devil is the father?
Well, in point of fact, I am.
You? Freddy, you don't mean to tell me you're married?
Well, lots of people are, you know. In fact, marriage has been quite the thing during the war.
Well, I'm jolly glad to hear it. I knew you'd be caught one of these days. Congratulations.
Bill!
Oh, thanks very much. I'm staying here, you know.
Are you? That's first rate. Is your missus staying with us, too?
Mike? Oh, well, that's rather difficult to explain.
Frederick, I can't stand this suspense. You tell him.
Fred, you don't mean to say you've married Victoria's mother?
No! not exactly.
What do you mean, not exactly? I hope you haven't been trifling with the affections of my mother-in-law.
Oh, do I look as if I were the mother of a 4-month-old baby?
Well, we live in an age of progress. One should keep an open mind about such things.
You quite misunderstand me, Bill. We are not married.
Oh. I'm sorry. I should have liked to be your son-in-law, Freddy. But if you've compromised Mrs. Shuttleworth, don't you think you ought to marry her?
He hasn't compromised her, and he can't marry her.
I don't want to seem inquisitive, but if you didn't marry Victoria's mother, who did you marry?
Dash it all, I married Victoria!
Dear Mr. Peyton, it was sweet of you to come and see me this morning. I was afraid you wouldn't have time.
The moment you telephoned me and told me you had taken shock at the appalling thought of having two existing husbands, I came at once, dear lady.
Why do you call me dear lady?
Out of pure embarrassment. I don't know now whether to call you Mrs. Cardew or Mrs. Lance.
Why don't you split the difference and call me Victoria?
What, may I?
It'll make me feel that you're not entirely a stranger to me.
Oh, dear Victoria, let me kiss your hand. Why? Your wedding rings. You always used to wear two.
As long as I thought poor Bill was dead, I didn't want to forget him.
But why have you removed them both?
I'm all at sea. I'm married to two men, and I feel as though I were married to neither.
Oh, wife, with all my heart you weren't.
How emphatic you are. Why?
Can't you guess?
I must be very stupid.
Don't you know that I dote upon you? I curse my unhappy fate that I did not meet you before you were married.
Would you have asked me to marry you?
Morning, noon, and night, until you consented.
I'm not free, but if I were...
If you were?
Lester, I wonder would you take me out to lunch today?
Oh, Victoria! Oh, Victoria!
Morning, Cardew.
Morning, Lowndes.
Sleep well?
No. You?
Awful. Cold down here in the drawing room, isn't it?
Haven't noticed. Why don't you light the fire, then?
Unpatriotic. Victoria says so. She has to have one in the bedroom, and we must have one in the nursery. Where the devil did you get that suit?
Rather natty, eh? Victoria sent it in to me.
Mine! The only new suit I've had since the war. Upon my soul, I think that's a bit thick.
Well, if it comes to that, where did you get that pearl tie pin?
Oh, Victoria gave it to me on my birthday.
But it's mine. She gave it to me on my birthday first. Give it back to me.
I'll see you blow first. At your death, you left everything to her in your will. If she chose to give this to me, it's none of your business. By the way, Did you ever have a hammered gold cigarette case?
Rather. That was Victoria's wedding present to me. Did you get it too?
Thrifty woman, Victoria.
I say, unless I have a fire here, I shall turn into the Albert Memorial.
Well, there's one set there in the grate. Light it and see what happens.
I think I will. Give me a match.
Oh, use my lighter.
Victoria give you this?
Yes.
Me too. Yeah.
Victoria will be furious.
That's your lookout.
Nothing to do with me. You're master in this house.
Not at all. I am but an honored guest.
Nonsense. The moment you appeared, I sank into insignificance. When would you like me to clear out?
My dear fellow, why should you wish to do that? Surely you don't for a moment imagine that I shall be in the way. I propose to make my visit quite a brief one.
I'm sorry to hear that. Victoria will be disappointed. But of course it's no concern of mine. You and your wife must arrange things between you.
My dear chap, you entirely misunderstand me. I am not the man to come between you and your wife.
What the devil do you mean?
Well, if it comes to that, what the devil do you mean?
Good morning, Bill.
Morning, Victoria.
Good morning, Freddy.
Good morning, Victoria.
I kissed Bill first, Freddy, because he's been away so long.
Oh, naturally. And he was your husband long before I was.
Oh! Who lit that fire?
He did.
But it was his lighter.
Oh. Of course, you don't care if we run so short of coal that I freeze to death in my room upstairs. It's simply criminal not to be careful in wartime.
But you didn't think of that when you married Freddy.
I did that for your sake, Bill, darling. He was such a pal of yours.
She was simply inconsolable when you were killed.
It's lucky you were there to console her.
But, Bill, darling, it was Freddy's wonderful friendship for you that won my heart.
That's right, Bill. I know Victoria's faithful heart. She can never really love any man but you. Victoria, you know how I adore you. You're the only woman in the world for me. But I realize there's only one thing for me to do. Bill has come back. There's only one course open to me as a gentleman and a man of honor. It's a bitter, bitter sacrifice. But I am equal to it. I renounce all rights in you. I will go away, a wiser and a sadder man, and leave you to Bill. Goodbye, Victoria.
Oh, how beautiful of you, Freddy. What a soul you've got.
Goodbye, Victoria. Forget me and live happily with a better man than I. Goodbye, Bill. Be kind to her. I couldn't do this for anyone but you. I'm going out of your lives forever.
Over my dead body?
What? What the devil do you mean? Get away from that door and let me leave.
No, no, nothing doing.
Bill! Bill, why prolong a painful scene?
My dear Victoria, I am not a man to accept a sacrifice like Freddy's. No, the War Office has decided that I'm dead. You've had a memorial service. You've been in mourning. You're happy. It would be monstrously selfish if I disturbed the state of things which is so eminently satisfactory to you both. No, I will not come between you.
Oh, Bill, how noble!
Now, wait a minute.
Victoria, to all intents and purposes, I am as dead as mutton. I will remain so.
But Victoria will never be happy with me now that you've come back.
Not another word. She is yours.
My dear Bill, you know me very little. I'm lazy, selfish, bad-tempered, mean, gouty, and predisposed to several contagious diseases.
Freddy, old man, I can no longer conceal from you that with a constitution ruined by dissipation in my youth and broken by the ravages of war, I have not much longer to live. Besides, Victoria knows only too well that I am vindictive and overbearing, extravagant, violent, and mendacious. You must have her.
No, you, old chap, I insist.
No, no, old man, I must decline you.
You?
You!
Oh, I understand it all. You're both so noble, you're both so heroic, you're both so unselfish. But I cannot have two husbands, really I cannot.
I have an idea.
It's sure to be a rotten one.
Let's draw lots.
I knew it was a rotten one.
How do you mean, Freddy?
Well, we'll take two pieces of paper. Oh, here, there's some on the desk. And I'll put a cross on one of them. So, and fold them up, like this, and put them in a hat. Oh, here we are. Now we'll draw. And the one who gets the cross gets Victoria.
Oh, that'll be rather thrilling.
And whoever draws the blank paper renounces all claim to Victoria. He vanishes from the scene like a puff of smoke. He'll never be heard of again.
I don't like it. I do it under protest.
You take the hat, Victoria. Now shake it.
Shake it well.
All right. Isn't this exciting? There now. You draw first, Freddy.
All right. There. I'll unfold the paper now.
Well, Freddy, is it the one with the cross?
No, blank, blank, blank. And mine's the one with the cross.
Oh, my poor Freddy.
Don't pity me, Victoria. I want all my courage now. I've lost you, and I must bid you goodbye forever.
Oh, no, Freddy, that would be too awful. You must come to afternoon tea from time to time.
I couldn't. That's more than I could bear. I shall never forget you. You're the only woman I've ever loved. Goodbye. I go into the night.
Oh, aren't you going at once?
I am.
Well, it happens to be the middle of the day.
I was speaking of me.
Before you go, Freddy, I should like to have a look at your bit of paper. The one with the blank.
The one with the blank?
Yes.
But why?
Mere curiosity.
Really, Bill, I don't know how you can be so heartless as to give way to curiosity when my heart is one great aching wound. Anyway, I threw it in the fire.
Oh, no, you didn't. You put it in your pocket. Here.
Oh, but take your hand out of my pocket.
Not till I get that piece of paper.
Stop it! Hit him on the head with a poker, Victoria.
Don't be unladylike, Victoria. Got it. You dirty dog.
What's the matter?
Look, Victoria, this is Freddy's blank slip of paper.
Why, it's got a cross on it.
They both had crosses on them.
I don't understand.
Don't you? He was making quite sure that I shouldn't draw a blank.
What? I don't... Freddy!
I did it for your sake, Victoria. I knew that your heart was set on Bill, only you couldn't bear to hurt my feelings. So I thought I'd make it easier for you. You see?
May I speak to you for a minute, madam?
What? Oh, not now, Taylor. I'm busy.
I'm afraid it's very urgent, madam.
Oh? Oh, very well. I'll come. Don't say anything important until I come back. Either of you. Come along, Taylor.
Yes, madam.
How did you guess? About the two crosses, I mean.
You were so devilish calm about it all.
That was the calm of despair.
One might almost think you didn't want Victoria.
It's not that exactly. No man could want a better wife.
No, she's prettier.
Charming.
Likeful.
I confess that sometimes I thought it hard that when I wanted a thing, it was selfishness, and when she wanted it, it was only her due.
And I don't mind admitting that sometimes I used to wonder why it was only natural for me to sacrifice my inclinations, but in her it was proof of a beautiful nature.
I have asked myself on occasions why my time was of no importance, while hers was so precious.
I did sometimes wish I could call my soul my own.
The fact is, I'm not worthy of her, Bill. As you so justly say, no man could want a better wife.
No, you said that.
But I'm fed up. If you had been dead, I'd have seen you through like a gentleman, but you've turned up like a bad shilling. Now you take up the white man's burden.
I'll see you hanged first.
But she must have one husband,
and she must choose between us.
Oh, that's not giving me a chance. I've got a charming nature, and I'm extremely handsome. Victoria will naturally choose me.
Well, heaven knows I'm not vain, but I've always been given to understand that I'm an almost perfect specimen of manly beauty. My conversation is not only amusing, but instructive.
Now listen here.
Servants have given notice now because they don't approve of my having two husbands.
Oh, well, Freddy and I will do the housework until you get some more. Or whichever one of us you choose to keep.
Oh, how can I choose? I adore you both. Besides, there's so little to choose between you.
Oh, I don't know about that. Freddy has a charming nature and he's extremely handsome.
But, Bill, I must tell you to your face that you're an almost perfect specimen of manly beauty. And your conversation is not only amusing, but instructive.
I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Before you decide, I feel it only fair to make a confession to you. Victoria, in my department, there's a stenographer. She's of the feminine gender. She has blue eyes and little yellow curls at the nape of her neck. With the rest, I leave to your imagination.
Really? Frederick! Well, that certainly simplifies matters. I can't quite see myself as the third lady in the back row of a harem.
You'd run no risk of being that in Canada. Women are scarce in Manitoba.
What are you talking about?
Victoria, I have come to the conclusion that England offers me no future. Make me the happiest of men and we'll emigrate together.
To Canada?
Where the Sables come from.
Not the best ones.
I shall buy a farm. I think it would be a very good plan if you employ your leisure until then in learning to cook the simple fare on which we shall live. And how to milk cows?
I hate cows.
I see the idea appeals to you. It'll be a wonderful life, Victoria. You'll light the fire and scrub the floors and cook the dinner and wash the clothes. Simple but good.
And what will I do in my spare moments?
We will cultivate your mind by reading the Encyclopedia Britannica together. Take a good look at us, Victoria, me and Freddy, and say which of us it's to be.
To tell you the truth, I don't see why it should be either.
What?
The war is over now, and I think I've done my bit. I've married two DSOs. Now I want to marry a Rolls Royce.
But I thought you adored us.
Well, you see, I adore you both. It's six of one and half a dozen of the other, and the result is...
A washout.
Hang it all, I think it's a bit thick. You mean you fixed up to marry someone else behind our backs?
Pardon me, madam.
Yes, Taylor?
Mr. Lester Payton's downstairs in his car, madam.
Is it the Rolls Royce?
I think it is, madam.
Excuse me, gentlemen. You see, the Rolls Royce is taking me out to lunch.
Well.
And so the curtain falls on Act One of tonight's Caltex Theatre play, The Third Husband.
If you care for your car, fill up with the gasoline designed to take better care of your car's performance. If you're already a confirmed Caltex man, you'll know what we mean. If you're not, fill up with Caltex Butane Boosted Gasoline and see what a performance difference there is. Caltex Butane Boosted Gasoline gives faster starts, smoother acceleration, and more economical running. The gasoline designed for today's faster pace, Caltex Butane Boosted Gasoline, takes better care of your car's performance. Drive in for Caltex Butane Boosted Gasoline at the sign of the Caltex Star, where we take better care of your car.
The Caltex Theater now presents Margaret Christensen, Alan White, and Leonard Bullen in The Third Husband, Act Two.
Well, where were we? Oh, yes. I went off to lunch with Lester Payton. Dear Lester, he always orders nothing but the best. And I left Freddie and Bill, my two husbands, at home to work things out between them. And what they did was to decide that Freddie should take care of the housework in the absence of my servants, while Bill did all the cooking. A day or two of that, and tempers became rather heated in the kitchen. Very heated indeed.
Your trouble, Freddie, is that you have no organization. I have organization. That's my secret of success.
I was a mug to say I do the housework. I might have known you'd freeze onto a soft, warm job like cooking.
Cooking is an art. Any fool can do housework.
I'll give you a thick ear in a minute. Just try and shine a pair of boots and see if it's easy.
I don't believe you know the secret of polishing boots. Did you spit on them?
No, only on the silverware.
Well, you'd better get that table laid. I'm going to finish this book while the food cooks.
Is it luncheon or dinner?
Well, I don't know yet, but we're having it here in the kitchen because it's easier for dishing up. Organization again.
I don't know what Victoria will say to that. She's in an awful temper this morning. The water in her bathroom wasn't hot.
Well, cold baths are much better for people. Healthy.
Tell that to the horse marines. You were too lazy to get up in time and light the fire. That's all there is to it.
I wish you'd let me finish this book. I want to find out if the nursery governess marries the Duke after all. You ought to read it when I finish.
I don't have time for reading. When I take on a job, I like to do it properly.
Ooh. He's just glued his lips to hers.
Well, the steak smells as though it's almost done.
Done? It's only been on for a quarter of an hour.
But in a grill room, they do your steak in 10 minutes.
You cook meat a quarter of an hour for every pound. I should have thought any fool knew that.
Well, what's that got to do with it?
There's 3 pounds of steak, so I'm going to cook it for 3/4 of an hour.
But look here, if there were 3 steaks of a pound each, you cooked them 1/4 of an hour each.
Exactly. 3/4 of an hour altogether.
I really think it's too bad of you. I've been ringing the bell for the last 1/4 of an hour. There are 2 men in the house, and you neither of you pay me the least attention.
We were having an argument about the steak I'm cooking you for luncheon.
I shan't be in for luncheon.
Why not?
Because Mr. Lester Payton has made me an offer of marriage, and I have accepted it.
What? But you've got 2 husbands already, Victoria.
I imagine you'll both be gentlemen enough to put no obstacle in the way of my getting my freedom. That will be my solicitor, Mr. A.B. Rahn. I asked him to come and fix up my divorce. Go and open the door, will you, Freddie?
All right.
You're not letting the grass grow under your feet, are you?
So you've quite made up your mind to divorce me?
Quite.
Oh. In that case, I can always look upon you as another man's wife.
What do you mean by that?
Only that I can make love to you now without feeling a thundering ass.
Oh, Bill! What a pity it is you were ever my husband. I'm sure you'd make a charming lover.
I've often thought that's the better part.
Take care. I can hear them coming. It'd never do for my solicitor to find me in my husband's arms.
No, it'd be outrageous.
We're all out here in the kitchen, Mr. Rahm. Would you come through?
How do you do, Mr. Rahm? Do you know my husband?
Ah, I'm pleased to meet you, gentlemen. I dare say it would facilitate matters if I were told which of you is which and which is the other.
This is Major Cardew, my first husband, and this is Major Lowndes, my second husband.
You can quite understand that this is a position of some delicacy for Mrs. Cardew.
Mrs. Cardew? Oh, you mean Mrs. Lowndes. Or which is she? No matter. The fact is, she's decided to be neither.
I just broken that news to them.
You find us still staggering from the shock.
Staggering? Do I understand that both you gentlemen are agreeable to being divorced?
Speaking for myself, I am prepared to sacrifice my feelings, deep as they are, to the happiness of Victoria.
Very nicely and feelingly put.
Bill always was a gentleman.
And you, Major Lowndes, will you give this lady the freedom she desires?
I will. When did I last say those words? Of course, the marriage service.
Well, so far, so good. Now, details. We can arrange everything here and now. Mrs. Cardew Lowndes, in England, when a wife desires to divorce her husband, she must prove either cruelty or desertion. Which do you propose to use?
Personally, I should prefer desertion.
Certainly. I should very much dislike to be cruel to you, Victoria.
And you know, I could never hurt a fly.
Then we will settle on desertion. I think myself it is the more gentlemanly way. And besides, it's more easily proved. The procedure is excessively simple. Mrs. Cardew-Lowndes will write each of you a letter. A letter which I shall dictate, asking you to return to her. The usual phrase is to make a home for her. And you will refuse. I propose that you should both give me your refusals now.
Before we've had the letter?
Precisely. The letter which she will write, and which is read out in court, is so touching that on one occasion the husband, about to be divorced, was so moved that he immediately returned to his wife.
Oh.
She was very angry indeed. So now I invariably get the refusal first.
Yes, it's so difficult to write an answer to a letter that hasn't been written.
To meet that difficulty, I have also prepared the replies. Here we are. They're typed, requiring only your signatures. There, Major Cardew.
They're on Hotel Majestic notepaper.
You'll see the point later. Here is yours, Major Lowndes.
Are they both the same?
Oh, certainly not. I have two letters that I generally make use of, and I propose that you should each of you use one of them. The theme of one is sorrow rather than anger. The other is rather vituperative. You can decide between you which of you had better send which.
Well, they both habitually swore at me. But I think Bill's language was more varied.
That settles it. Major Lowndes, you had better sign this letter. Read it first if you care to.
My dear Victoria, I have given your letter anxious consideration. If I thought there was any hope of our making a greater success of married life in the future than we have in the past, I should be the first to suggest that we should make one more attempt.
Very touching.
Read on.
But I have regretfully come to the conclusion that to return to you would only be to cause a recurrence of the unhappy life from which I know you have suffered no less than I. I am bound, therefore, definitely to refuse your request. I do not propose under any circumstances to return to you. Yours sincerely.
That's where you sign your full name, Major Lowndes.
A very nice letter, Freddy. I shall always think pleasantly of you.
I have my points.
Now, Major Cardew, would you care to read your letter?
Yes, well, my dear Victoria, I am in receipt of your letter asking me to return to you. Our life together has been a hell upon earth, and I have long realized that our marriage was a tragic mistake. You have sickened me with scenes and tortured me with jealousy. If you have tried to make me happy, you have succeeded singularly ill. I trust I shall never see you again, and nothing in the world will induce me ever to resume a life which I can only describe as a miserable degradation.
Bill, how could you write such a thing?
Well, I...
But now the crowning touch. Mark the irony of the polite ending. I beg to remain yours most sincerely. That's where you sign your name.
Yeah. Yeah, I signed it.
And then that's settled. Now we only have to go into court, apply for a decree of restitution of conjugal rights, and 6 months later bring action for divorce.
6 months later? But when shall I be free then?
Oh, in about a year.
Oh, but that won't do at all. I must have my freedom at once.
Oh, well, in that case, the only thing is cruelty.
Not cruelty. I could never strike a woman.
If I don't mind, I don't see why you should. And my mother will swear she witnessed anything.
Yes, but servants are better. But even then, one has to be careful. Once I remember, on my instructions, the guilty husband hit the lady I was acting for in the jaw, which unfortunately knocked out her false teeth. The gentleman she had arranged to marry happened to be present, and he was so startled that he took the next steamer for Martinique and has never been heard of since.
Well, I'm happy to say that Victoria's teeth are all her own.
Undoubtedly. I merely tell you that to show you what may happen. But I have devised my own system, and I've never known it to fail. I always arrange for three definite acts of cruelty. First, at the dinner table.
Yes?
Now, gentlemen, when you've tasted your soup, you throw down your spoon with a clatter and say, "Good heavens, this soup is uneatable. Can't you get a decent cook?"
This soup is uneatable. Can't you get a decent cook?
Oh, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. You, madam, will answer, "I do my best, darling," upon which you gentlemen, crying out in a loud voice, "Take that, you fool," throw the plate straight at her.
Oh, yes.
Now, with a little ingenuity, the lady can dodge the plate of soup, and the only damage is done to the tablecloth.
Oh.
The second act of cruelty is a little less violent. I suppose you have a revolver.
I can get one.
Then, having carefully removed the cartridges, you ring the bell for a servant, and just as she opens the door, you point it at the lady and say, "You lying devil, I'll kill you." Then you, madam, give a loud shriek and cry to the maid, "Oh, save me, save me.
Oh, save me, save me." I should love doing that. So dramatic.
Now we come to physical as opposed to moral cruelty. It's as well to have two witnesses to this. The gentleman takes the lady by the throat, at the same time hissing malevolently, "I'll throttle you if I swing for it, by heavens." Oh, and it's very important to leave a bruise so that the doctor, who should be sent for immediately, can swear to it.
"I'll throttle you if I swing for it, by heavens."
Yeah, splendid, Major Lance. Splendid.
Yes, not bad at all. Thank you.
Now we come to a point trivial enough in itself, but essential in order to satisfy the requirements of our English divorce laws. The matter of infidelity.
That I think you can safely leave to us.
Oh, by no means. I think that would be most dangerous.
But surely human nature can be trusted there.
We are not dealing with human nature, we're dealing with the law. I always arrange this part of the proceedings with the most scrupulous regard to propriety. I will engage you a suite of rooms at the Majestic Hotel. You remember it was from there you wrote declining to return to your wife. The judge never fails to remark on the coincidence. On a date to be settled hereafter, you will come to my office where you will meet a lady.
Do you mean to say you provide her too?
Certainly.
What's she like?
A most respectable person. I have employed her in these cases for many years.
It sounds as though she made a business of it.
She does.
What?
Yes, she had the idea, a most ingenious one to my mind, that in these days of specialized professions, there was great need for someone to undertake the duties of intervener. That is the female equivalent of correspondent in divorce, you know. She has been employed by the best legal firms in London and has figured in practically all the fashionable divorces for the last 15 years.
You amaze me.
Yes, a most unselfish, noble-minded woman. Gentlemen, you will fetch this lady at my office and drive her to the Hotel Majestic, where you will register as Major and Mrs. Cardew, or Major and Mrs. Lowndes, as the case may be. You will be shown into the suite of rooms which I shall engage for you. Supper will be served in the sitting room. You will partake of this, and you will drink champagne.
I would like to choose the brand myself.
Oh, I have no objection to that.
Thanks.
Then you will play cards.
Cards?
Miss Montmorency is a wonderful card player. She not only has an unparalleled knowledge of all games for two, but she can do a great number of tricks. In this way, you will find the night will pass without tediousness. And in the morning, after you have paid your bill, you will take Miss Montmorency in a taxicab and deposit her at my office.
It sounds like a hell of a beano.
I should like to see her first.
Ah, I took the liberty of bringing Miss Montmorency with me. She's waiting in the taxi at the door, and if you like, I'll go and fetch her.
Splendid. I'll go along and bring her down here.
Is she the sort of person I should like to meet, Mr. Rahm?
Oh, a perfect lady. She comes from one of the best families in Shropshire.
Do fetch her then, Freddy.
Right you are. I'd like to take a look at her myself.
I should like to see her, Mr. Rahm. Men are so weak, and I shall be easier in my mind if I can be sure these poor boys won't be led astray.
Mr. Rahm, do you mean to say that with this evidence you'll be able to get a divorce?
Not a doubt of it. I've got hundreds.
Why on earth does such a state of affairs exist?
That is the question which at one time I often asked myself. I confess it seemed to me that when two married persons agreed to separate, it was nobody's business but their own. Then at last I hit upon the explanation.
What was it then?
Well, if the law were always wise and reasonable, it would be obeyed so easily that to obey the law would become an instinct. Now, it's not good for the community that the people should be too law-abiding. So our ancestors, in their wisdom, devised certain laws which were vexatious or absurd so that men should break them and therefore be led insensibly to break others.
But why is it not good for the community that people should be too law-abiding?
My dear sir, how else would the lawyers earn their living?
I see your point. You convinced me completely.
Victoria! She's coming. She's coming.
Who's coming, Freddy?
Miss Montmorency. Wait till you see her.
Is this the way?
Oh, come straight in, Miss Montmorency.
You see, Bill, the other woman in our life.
Holy smoke. 50 if she's a day.
Nearer 60, I'd say.
Oh, but this is the kitchen?
I'm afraid it's the only room in the house that's habitable at the moment.
To the practiced observer, the signs of domestic infelicity jump to the eye, as the French say.
Miss Montmorency, Mrs. Frederick Lowndes.
I am charmed to make your acquaintance. The injured wife, I presume?
Yes. Oh,
so sad, so sad. I'm afraid the war is responsible for the rupture of many happy marriages. I'm booked up for weeks ahead. So sad, so sad.
Do sit down, won't you?
Thank you. Do you mind if I get out my notebook? I like to get everything clear, and my memory is not what it was. Now, which of these gentlemen is the erring husband?
Well, they both are.
Oh, really? And which are you going to marry after you've got your divorce?
Neither.
Neither? Oh. It's a very peculiar case, Mr. Rahm. When I saw these two gentlemen, I naturally concluded that one was the husband Mrs. Frederick Lowndes was discarding, and the other the husband she was acquiring. The eternal triangle, you know?
In this case, the triangle is four-sided.
Oh. Very peculiar.
We see a lot of strange things in our business, Miss Montmorency.
You are informing me, as the French say.
I don't want you to think I've been at all light or careless, but the fact is, through no fault of my own, they're both my husbands.
Oh, really? Very interesting. And which are you divorcing?
I'm divorcing them both.
Oh, I see. Very sad, very sad.
We're taking as cheerful a view of it as we can.
Ah, yes, that's what I say to my clients. Courage, courage. Mr. Rahm, I think I ought to tell you at once that I shouldn't like to compromise... I use the technical sense. I shouldn't like to compromise both these gentlemen.
But, Miss Montmorency...
I have to think of my self-respect. One gentleman is business. Two would be debauchery.
Mrs. Lowndes is anxious to put this matter through as quickly as possible.
Yes, well, I dare say my friend Mrs. Onslow Jarvis of Clacton would oblige if I asked her as a personal favour.
Are you sure she can be trusted?
Oh, she's a perfect lady and most respectable.
I'm all for Mrs. Onslow Jarvis, personally.
Oh, then you fall to me, Major. I didn't quite catch your name.
Cardew, William Cardew.
Ah, well, I hope you play cards, Major Cardew.
Sometimes.
I am a great card player. Such a relief to find a gentleman who's fond of cards.
Otherwise, I dare say the night seems rather long.
Oh, no, no, not to me, you know. I'm such a student of human nature. But my gentlemen begin to grow a little restless when I've talked to them for 6 or 7 hours.
I can hardly believe it.
Oh, one gentleman actually said that he wanted to go to bed. But of course I told him that would never do.
Forgive my asking. You know what men are. Do they never attempt to take any liberties with you?
Oh, no. If you're a lady, you can always keep a man in his place. And Mr. Rahm only takes the very best sort of cases.
I assure you, Miss Montmorency, that you need have no fear that I shall take advantage of your delicate position.
Thank you. Thank you, Major Cardew. I'm sure we shall have a delightful night. I can see that we have much in common.
It's so good of you to say so.
And, Major Lowndes, I know you're like Mrs. Onslow Jarvis, a perfect lady. She has so much charm of manner, such ease. They have a very nice class of people at Clacton.
I shall be charmed to meet her.
And, Major Cardew, you will let me know in good time when you fix the fatal night. I'm very much booked up just now.
Of course, we'll do everything to suit your convenience, Miss Montmorency. And now, Mrs. Lowndes, since we have settled everything, I think Miss Montmorency and I will go.
I can't think of anything else.
Excuse me taking the liberty, Mrs. Frederick Lowndes, but after your great trouble is over, should you be wanting any face massage, may I give you my card?
Oh, do you do face massage?
Only for ladies who are personally recommended to me. Here is my card.
Esmeralda Montmorency.
Yes, it's a pretty name, isn't it? I also make the Esmeralda cream. The Marchioness of Twickenham's face was simply ravaged when she was divorcing the Marquis. And believe me, after a course of 12 treatments, you would not have known her.
I'll certainly keep your card.
Goodbye, then. I'm not going to say goodbye to you, Major Cardew, but au revoir.
Believe me, I look forward to our next meeting.
Good morning, Mrs. Lowndes. Good morning, gentlemen. Shall we go out this way, Miss Montmorency?
Oh, the back steps? Oh, very well. So quaint and old-fashioned. Still, I always think a lady, if she is a lady, can do anything.
Now, the only thing left is for me to bid you both goodbye.
Won't you even stay to luncheon?
I don't think I will, thanks. I think I shall get a better one at Mother's.
Oh, you're going there?
Where else do you expect a woman to go in a crisis like this?
I should think that steak was about done, William.
Oh, I'll give it another hour or two to make sure.
Of course. Of course, I realize this is a painful moment for both of you. But as you say, we shan't make it any easier by dragging it out.
True, true.
Goodbye, Bill. I forgive you everything. And I hope we shall always be good friends.
Goodbye, Victoria. I hope this will not be by any means your last marriage.
When everything is settled, you must come and dine with us. I'm sure you'll find that Lester has the best wines and cigars that money can buy.
I'm sure of it. Goodbye.
And now, Freddy, it's your turn. Now that there's nothing between us, you might give me back that tie pin I gave you.
Oh. Oh, righto. Here you are.
And there was a cigarette case.
Take it. There.
They say jewelry has gone up enormously in value since the war. I shall give Lester a cigarette case as a wedding present.
You always do, Victoria.
Men like it. Goodbye, Freddy, dear. I shall always have a pleasant recollection of you.
Goodbye, Victoria.
Would you like me to call you a taxi?
No, thanks. I think the exercise will do my figure good. Bye-bye.
Ah, a wonderful woman.
I shall never regret having married her. Now, let's have lunch.
I wish I look forward to it as much as you do.
My dear chap, has that affecting scene taken away your appetite?
It's not the appetite I'm doubtful about, it's the steak.
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll just go and dish it up. Devil? It won't come on.
That's your problem.
Oh, well, we'll just have to eat it out of the frying pan. Shall I carve it?
Please.
I can't even dent it. Well, why don't you do something, you fool?
Shall I go and fetch my little hatchet? There's someone at the kitchen door. I'll see.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hello, what's this? What can I do for you, lady?
Does Mrs. Frederick Wells live here?
In a manner of speaking...
This is for her, from the Ritz Hotel.
What's that? Walk right in, my boy, and put that great heavy basket of food on the table.
Food?
With Mr. Lester Payton's compliments.
It's a complete luncheon.
I was told to give the basket to the lady personally.
Oh, that's all right, my boy.
If the lady's not here, I'm to take it back again.
She's just out in the hall. I'll tell her. Victoria, my darling, that kind Mr. Lester Payton has sent you a little light refreshment from the Ritz. She says, how sweet, leave it with us.
But
here's half a crown for you, my lad. Now you hop it, quick.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thanks very much, sir.
Now you can eat the steak if you like. I'm going to eat Victoria's luncheon.
What a dashed unscrupulous thing to do. I'll join you. Now, what's the dish?
Ah, chicken and casserole.
That sounds good. Here, give me that champagne and I'll open it.
Pâté de foie gras? Good.
Oh, yes.
Caviar?
Hmm?
No, smoked salmon. Stout fellow, Mr. Lester Payton. This is a regular beano. How's that cork going?
Half a minute, it's just coming. Got the glasses?
Here. Well, this is what I call a nice little snack. Dear Victoria, she was a good sort.
In her way.
But give me pâté de foie gras.
Pass over your glass.
You are. I'm as hungry as a trooper.
Uh-huh. There. Now, before we start, I want you to drink a toast.
I'll drink to anything.
Victoria's third husband.
Heaven help him.
And for us, liberty.
Liberty. Ah.
So ends our Caltech's play, The Third Husband. In a moment, we will give you tonight's cast and tell you about next week's presentation in the Caltech Theater. The Third Husband was adapted for radio by David Netheim from the play Home and Beauty by Somerset Maugham. In the starring roles, you heard Margaret Christensen as Victoria, Alan White as William, and Leonard Bullen as Frederick. The supporting cast was as follows. Lester Payton was played by David Eadie, A.B. Rahm, Ron Whelan, Miss Montmorency, Therese Desmond, Mrs. Shuttleworth, Catherine Neal, Taylor, Dorothea Dunstan. Now, this is your compere, Rick Hutton, bidding you good night on behalf of your hosts, Caltex Oil, marketers of Caltex Super Gasoline and Caltex Gasoline, the world-famous RPM 1030 Special Motor Oil, and Marfec Lubrication.